The Guardian.
On the day when the Swedish Academy selected the poet Thomas Tranströmer as the latest Nobel Literature Laureate, we speak to the Academy's Permanent Secretary, Peter Englund, about the man and his work, and why the Academy couldn't ignore the claims of a Swedish poet.
I would like to say that that his nationality in this case, I really hope that it is quite secondary. I would put it to you that he is already a part of world literature, in that sense that he is probably the most translated poet living today.
He's been translated into more than 50 languages, I understand.
More than 60, actually.
More than 60?
More than 60. And you can also get a sense of that when I've been looking at the nominations for the Nobel Prize. He has been nominated, the first time was 93, and he has been nominated every year since. And a majority of the nominations come from outside of Sweden.
So what was it about his work that is so tremendous?
Well, he is a... He has an enormous economy of words and expression. It gives his poems a rare density. And he has also combined with an amazing ability to coin metaphors, but not in a sort of mechanical sense. Oh, that was aptly put, but it's because his metaphors often opens up the world for us. It gives new meanings to things or situations or people or emotions and so on. He is often writing about quite mundane things in that sense. The poems often start in a very familiar and mundane situation that I think most of us can recognize. But then he has this amazing ability to make some sort of shift inside the poem. For instance, where this the sense of being trapped into everyday life, that is one of his themes. It's suddenly the shift occurs inside the poem and it opens up for a paradoxical sense of inner freedom.
He began publishing poetry in 1954 while he was still at college.
51,
oh, there you go. Yeah. How has his work evolved since his early landscape poems?
That's one of the amazing things. If you take his first collection that was published in 1951 and you read the first poem there, and it is describing the waking up process, and we all have been there, and it's describing it as a parachute jump from the dream into reality. And he's waking up and it's a summer day. Everything that makes him so great as a poet, you can find it in that very first poem, in that very first collection of poems, 17 poems it's called. So, of course, he's becoming more and more proficient in a technical sense, but all the things that make him great, they are present even in the first collection.
I understand he worked as a psychologist. Do you think this has affected the way he relates to the inner world?
Yes, I think it's very important that he has never been a full-time writer in that sense. He started to get quite a lot of attention already in the 70s, but he has been working as a psychologist all his life. And you can sense that in the poems, as I said, they are connected to everyday life, and it's about going to a job that you really doesn't enjoy and how to survive that, but in a very poetical sense. So I think that is one of the secrets behind the success, as it were, around the world. He's writing about everyday stuff.
Is this also one of the reasons why his output is comparatively sparse?
It is. And I think that the economy of words that you can see in his poems, it's also manifested in the economy of his output. You can essentially get the core of his work in a pocketbook of some 220 pages. You can get through him in an evening.
I understand that he also suffered a stroke in 1990, but has gone on writing. How do you think this illness has affected his work?
It has led him, of course, to even more economy when it comes to work. He's been writing the last one is very much in a haiku tradition, very very small, very sparse, very economical, small verses. So it has, of course, affected him. He started out early as a young man. He started studying composition and piano play. And I understand he still plays the piano.
I wanted to ask, because when he was in London last, he was playing specially written piano pieces.
Yes, because he has just one hand.
He has just one hand, exactly. Yes.
But he has actually become a better piano player after the stroke.
But will he be playing the piano instead of giving a speech when he picks up the prize?
Well, that's actually a good idea. Now, we will have a sort of, instead of the normal Nobel lecture, of course we can't have that, but we are going to have some sort of do here in the Great Hall with him in the center. I didn't think of that. It's, of course, a great idea to have him play a piece especially made for him.
Yeah, terrific, terrific. I was wondering, where should those of us who are unfamiliar with his work begin? It sounds like we should just bite off the whole lot and do it.
He is, as I said, he's been translated into many languages, and there are now, you can find at least two very good selected poems. I think one is called New Selected Poems or something like that. And then we have another one that's called The Half-Finished Heaven. They are both in print now. They are selections from a work that already has a very high density. It's pure gold, believe me.
If you had to quote just one line to convince any doubters, what would it be?
Okay, well, just one line, almost chosen in random, but I have it in my book here, a book I've been having for many, many years. Liksom ett minne långsamt förvandlas till dig själv. And I will try and translate it. As when a memory very slowly is turned into you.
A beautiful, beautiful line. And it sounds fantastic in Swedish as well. Are you steeling yourself against accusations of pro-European bias?
Well, I have to.
But it sounds like you're going to resist them bravely.
I will try and I will also say it's a valid point.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.